Goodman holding the high line. Coach, team presses a lot in training, presses a lot in practice. First goal came out of a beautiful press. Talk about how you saw it develop and how it was part of the overall philosophy you've been working on with the club.
Holding a high line, huh? That's the...
Me and Matt.
We like that. We like holding the high line.
I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Holding the high line with Rabbi and Red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line, Chris Armas's favorite soccer podcast. My name is Matt Pollard, and it's hump day, April 17th, 2024. Kroenke's other team is out of the Champions League. Sorry to all the Gooner fam out there. Spring has arrived in the Front Range, and the Quakes took a 3-0 home loss to the Rapids. I'm joined now by a man who's back from his Bay Area Burgundy Electric Boogaloo, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
Wow, Matt dropped so many deep cuts in there. He dropped the deep cut of something that happened in the postgame with Chris Armas. He dropped a deep cut of a tweet that Matt Doyle sent and that everybody got upset about. There's just always deep cuts with Matt. I'm not sure anybody appreciates it to the degree that I do. And sometimes, by the way, folks, they go over my head. Like sometimes, like he'll drop like a Fortuna Dusseldorf reference and he'll look at me like, "What? You didn't catch that? How come you didn't catch that?" Matt and I were running down dorky things that we picked up, and like I saw his jersey from a mile away and I went, "Is that a Forest Green Rovers jersey?" And he's like, "You know it is." And just ridiculous things like, why are we the way we are, Matt? Why are we the way we are?
I don't know, Mark, but I think it's wonderful that the universe conspired for us to meet each other through soccer and that we've gotten to continue this friendship, even though you've been in Pittsburgh for, is it 6 years now, Rabbi?
I'm on my sixth year, yeah.
Okay.
I'm doing hard time.
In
this wood-paneled basement during a thunderstorm, yeah.
Yeah, but so to your point, Mark, I think I've mentioned this a few times. Eventually, at some point, folks, we'll make enough money to where we can afford an unpaid intern who's getting a journalism or like a social media influencer bachelor's degree from CU Boulder, and you'll be able to see the video component of what we have. But normally, I will wear something thematic for the game that we are actually covering. So, for example, I have worn there was a COVID episode. And it was the first episode that we recorded after it was announced that FC Dallas like had COVID, brought COVID to the bubble. And so I wore an FC Dallas kit because chaos. And so, as most of you all know, this coming Saturday, the Colorado Rapids will be playing. It is Sustainability Night. It is 2 days before Earth Day, Mark, April 22nd, which I actually, in many ways, Mark, I like Earth Day more than I like my birthday. And as some of you also know, it is 420 as well. And so I thought it was only appropriate, Mark, for me to wear the shirt that I have from probably the most eco-conscious football club in the entire world. And the shirt that I'm wearing, the forest green one that kind of has the tiger stripesy look, is sponsored by She Shepherd, which is basically like legalized eco sea pirates, and it's made from entirely recycled ocean plastic or recycled polyester as well, I believe, and so it's fantastic, and so I'm super excited about that. But yes, there's a bunch of behind the scenes stuff, listeners, that I put out Easter eggs for the handful of people who will appreciate it. If you want to go back, I put sometimes fun stuff in the show notes because I know no one reads the show notes. If you want to go back, read like the first paragraph of the show notes from the Christmas Eve episode I dropped from the interview we did with Chris Armas back in mid-December, if you want to get a good chuckle out of that. But Mark, we've got soccer to talk about. Rabbi, we've now had, HDHL has had its first two away days back-to-back, and the Rapids have come out with 4 points. So our banter topic last week was me talking about standing in the presence of goatness in the case of Lionel Messi and what the experience was like going to Fort Lauderdale and a pop-up temporary stadium. Mark, I think PayPal Park is of the ilk of the newer architecture and the bells and whistles we have seen from MLS Stadia in MLS 3.0, MLS 4.0, but also it's the Quakes, it's a mid-tier market, it's a team that's working on a budget, and in many ways similar to a Dick's Sporting Goods Park, it is more of a shell of a stadium. Pray tell, Rabbi Mark Goodman, about your away day experience at PayPal, media standpoint, atmosphere standpoint, food trucks, etc.
Yeah, so, I mean, this was a really fun experience. I think I ticked my seventh MLS stadium off the bucket list. So, of course, the league keeps expanding, so I will probably never get to the end of it. Also, teams move, stadiums are, you know, reassigned, so on and so forth. You know, I think on the podcast last week, I said, like, I'm going to be in San Francisco next week, but I probably won't go to the game because it's just too far. And then I went, damn it, the Rapids are in town. I should go. Like, it's just, it is far, but I'll go anyways. It's a long train ride down from Berkeley. It's like almost 2 hours and 2 hours back to San Francisco. Don't ask why I was in Berkeley and then in San Francisco. It's just how it worked out. And I wound up staying out overnight because you could take an Uber back from San Jose to San Francisco, but that would have been crazy expensive. And strangely enough, our room that we were staying in really wasn't made for four people. It could like comfortably accommodate three. So I was like, oh, I'll get a hotel for the right night. Nobody will miss me. Anyhow, the approach to the game is not a great atmosphere as you walk from the train station. But then you get there and it's just one bacon wrapped hot dog cart after another. And the smell is amazing. There's a pretty decent tailgate going on, although I got there early. There's the south end is kind of open ended. So imagine basically kind of like how the Rapids have their north end, except instead of having that big box with the broken jumbotron, there's just nothing. There's just a big grass stretch.
And isn't that where the bar is though, Mark?
So there's a bar. But basically, the bar is kind of floating in the middle of, like, nothing. So there's a small stand, and it's kind of a restricted section that you get into. Then there's the bar, and then behind that, there's this big grass section. And then behind the grass is the food trucks. So, and it, everything's kind of sloped down. So from behind the bar, there's actually pretty decent views of the field if you're in the right place. And you can watch the game from the lines for the food trucks. So it's pretty good. The food trucks looked great. It's just that I don't think they had anything that was particularly vegetarian. And I didn't really want to wait in line. It was also a little soggy. It had been raining most of the day. So standing on that field was like, you know, I was getting muddy. So I think there's usually a good kickabout going on there. It's small sided, but, not this week. The Quakes media were really great folks. I really had a nice time with them. There is a lot to be said for, and I wrote this a couple weeks ago in the Western Conference preview that I kind of feel like San Jose is basically the Colorado Rapids with tech bros in the sense that they won in 01 and 03. They're kind of a low mid-market team. Their owner's kind of cheap. Their stadium it's nice and new, but they didn't get all the bells and whistles, so it's not quite up there. With like lower.com, which I went to last year, was just amazing. I mean, they spent a lot of money on their special amenity sections, which you can buy like kind of a season pass to, or you can get with certain tickets and so on. But like, you know, like outdoor campfires and s'mores brought to your table and like a kind of like a wine lounge and that thing that's really all the vogue in MLS, which is when the players exit the pitch to go to the locker room, there's some sort of glass enclosure that fans can watch, or the post game, like at LAFC, there's fans standing out in the media press room through behind a glass window so they can watch me and you interview Lionel Messi, but they can't actually be in the room. That exists in
That's
Cincinnati.
That's a nice touch. That's
I know,
a nice
right?
Touch.
That exists at LAFC and it exists in Cincinnati. So it doesn't have all those things. It has nice new seats. It has the cool bar. But after that, like, you know, it's got very simple pitch side suites that are not very fancy at all. The concessions are kind of under the bleachers and there's nothing special to them. The rake is really steep, which is kind of cool, but also like gets a little like vertigo-y in spots. You know, I decided I wanted to walk up to the press box three times. And the lady who had the rope into the press box laughed at me the second time because there's a 47-year-old man huffing and puffing as I come up the stairs for the second time and so on. And I mentioned in my article that, like, instead of having like a bespoke, special, like, you know, high-end, expensive bar that or club that only the fanciest of fancy can get access to seeing the players come off the pitch, in San Jose, there's just this walkway, and it just ramps over the concourse where people are getting nachos, and then it just dumps into a locker room area, which is almost the same as the Dick's locker room area. It's a big concrete bunker divided into home and away. It's not real fancy. So, that's the stadium setup for a MLS neutral or an away fan. It's a good experience, but it's not kind of an amazing experience. There's no march to the match. There's supporter section. I try to be polite about this in my article, but I'll say it a little bit blunter here, is as small or smaller as C38. They made the critical fatal error that C38 got out of a couple of years ago, which I did not know until after the game, which is they have two supporter sections and they're on opposite ends of the field from each other. So they've nerfed their kind of power. You know, they've got 100 people on the north end and 50 people on the south end, and that's it. You know, that's the supporters. I don't know why they do that. I assume it's because they don't have one unified supporting group, but it's a bad idea. They should stop doing it. They should move all their supporters to one place. The press experience was good. They sent us an email in advance that said all press will be virtual only, which I posted to No One Good FC. Which is our fun name for the fellow media people for the Colorado Rapids.
And we then have a group chat. We talk to each other for those who didn't know.
It's the media group chat for the Colorado Rapids. So I was like, I came all the way to San Jose, and they're going to put me in the press box on a laptop, and three floors down, they're going to do a press conference without me. That's weird. Okay, but I'll. And then I talked to the guys in the press box. They were like, yeah, that's just what they've been saying the last couple years. But the last couple weeks, they've actually done us in person this season only. So the Rapids folks said that the head comms guy for a guy named Ryan for San Jose said, oh, yeah, come down after the game and you'll go in for the post game with the Rapids. And I was like, cool. So I went in and I was like, I think I'm probably the only one in there. And it was. It was me and Chris Armas and Kinsey, who's the assistant head of comms right now, and a guy with a video camera, and Connor, the radio call guy. And that was it. That was the whole room. And so, you know, Matt asked the first question online and I asked the second question. And of course, in the post game with Chris, I identified myself. Now, for those of you who don't know who haven't watched a post game,
Mark, you send me the audio so I know.
Matt's going to run it.
Yeah, but we ran it at the intro. So,
oh, great.
Yes.
I'm so glad. I don't get to hear the
I'll
intro
add that in
when
post.
I'm. Fantastic. What I was going to say is this. Matt always introduced himself by his most prominent badge, right? His most impressive press credential, which is either Last Word on Soccer or Burgundy Wave, because he's the managing editor of Burgundy Wave. And of course, for those of you who've been following the Colorado Rapids for a long time, that's a big deal. You know, the managing editor of Burgundy Wave is
it's that in the Denver Post beat are the
no
they're
no
1A1,
no you are the crown prince. The Denver Post beat is the duke, maybe the count at best. But anyways, so I say Mark Goodman holding the high line, and Chris Armas goes, holding the high line, huh? That's good. We like holding the high line, which I think he was making a reference to the question I asked, which was about high pressing. But it might have been a reference to the podcast, which we'd always been joking, Matt, that he's listening and he's listening week after week. Actually, I only learned this week that he'd never heard of our podcast because it's only occurred to me this week that you've always been identifying yourself as Burgundy Wave, which is fine. I'm not criticizing at all. But anyways, I just thought that was really funny and I really enjoyed that. The only other things I'll say is just that, and I've been mentioned, I was kind of mentioning this, but like the feeling of Earthquakes media is like basically flashback to the worst times last year for our media cohort and how we talked about games. And, you know, they are in the absolute desert. They are appalled. They are horrified. They're all taking bets. You should watch Quake's Epicenter if you want a sense of this, which is
I'll put a link in the show notes to Mark's appearance on Epicenter.
They are like, I mean, they're 8 games in and they think Luchi Gonzalez is getting fired. I mean, that is bad. And they've lost 7 and I don't remember who they beat, but it's the feeling is bad, and it just felt for me it was just so interesting to be like, not gloating, not at all, like the opposite, like kind of mildly horrified to not to have won, but to have won over a team like this. And if you listen to this week's it was a good show, although you're listening to our podcast, you need no other soccer podcast. But if you listen to this week's Total Football Total Soccer Show, sorry, with Taylor Rockwell and his crew, when they get to reviewing all the MLS games, they review San Jose, Colorado by just talking for 10 minutes straight of what's wrong with San Jose. They don't at all talk about what a great job the Rapids did. They don't at all fixate on the rise of this team out of mediocrity into a place of respect in the league. They just talk about how horrible things are in San Jose. And that was an interesting experience about being at an away game. And Matt, I don't know if that felt that way for you, which is everything in Miami is Miami, 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 messy, messy, messy. And you feel like, you know, the Washington Generals going up against the Harlem Globetrotters. It's the same wherever you go when you're covering an away team, which is like, especially even when they're bad, which is nobody wants to talk about your team and what your team did well. They just want to talk about their team and how things are going badly. So anyways, it's a fascinating experience.
Well, Mark, if you asked certain people who are fans of Inter Miami, you would say there were only 2.5 players on the pitch for that 2-2 draw against between the Rapids and between Colorado. It was Messi, right. It was Busquets, and Alba's the half, in case you were wondering.
I wanted to say one last thing before I forget, because I forget things otherwise, which is just really quick. This was my first, and Matt, you're going to laugh because you've been doing this 17 times or 19 or 25 times a year, every year for the past like 8-7 years now or something like that. But this was my first post-game press conference in person in MLS. I've been doing it in USL and in high school soccer. But this is my first MLS post-game in 5 years, which is crazy.
No, you've been to...
Oh, wait,
been,
no, wait. I went,
you've been to
I
a
went
Rapids 4th of July game. You stayed
with
me.
I went to 4th of July with you. That's right. Did we? Yeah, we did post game there.
Yeah.
So it was only, okay, I take it back. It was only my second post game in like 5 years. So it was a very, but it was my first away presser. Here's the other thing. This was my first away presser of the Colorado Rapids in person, I think, since Seattle in 2016.
The playoff game.
Yeah, that was and that was maybe my first presser, which is pretty one of my first pressers. So anyways, that was a very odd experience too. But anyways, it was a lot of fun. Good times.
Okay, Mark, 2 things, then we actually have to talk about the soccer game. I suppose to prevent confusion going forward, we could say Holding the High Line podcast, so then that they know it's a podcast, because like you said, maybe Chris Armas got confused. Mark, I think we can put to bed, Chris said, when he said Holding the High Line, we like Holding the High Line, he was referring to the actual soccer tactic, not actually I like the podcast. But also, Chris, if you secretly are lurking and listening to the podcast, the next time you see me or Mark, blink 3 times. We won't tell anybody or anything. Like, I know there's at least one person in the front office. I know there's somebody in the analytics in the scouting department who listens to us. I know there's a bunch of people in media who listen to us. I know, Mark, of at least 5 former ticket sales reps who have taken jobs outside the Rapids who, when they were an employee, were listening to us as well. So yeah, we got a lot of lurkers, Mark, in Commerce City on Victory.
They're not lurkers, right? they're highlighters, maybe.
Okay, I would not
they're potential
mind.
Highlighters.
Yes, there's no way Anthony Hudson listened to the podcast. And if
blink 3 times if you listen, Anthony Hudson.
And if Robin Fraser was aware of it, Mark, I'm not convinced that he was grumpy about it, because he was grumpy about it. But if there was any head coach in the history of the Colorado Rapids who legit could listen to the podcast, like it, and then have some intercourse, some dialogue. I feel like Chris Armas is a self-aware person enough to do that. So, Chris, when I see you on Saturday for post-game media, blink three times, and then we'll know. I won't tell anybody. It can be off the record. Listeners, this past Saturday at PayPal Park, the Colorado Rapids played to a 3-0 victory over the San Jose Earthquakes. We get the scoring started in the 10th minute when Rafael Navajo, or Rafa, Mark, Chris Armas is pronouncing his name weird, and I disagree with it, so I'm going to continue to say Hoffa, but in any case.
I think you can go both ways and be okay.
The Rapids are pressing. The Quakes, who are towards their sideline, and Georgi Mihailovic helps win the ball back. He gets the ball to Navajo, and Navajo tries to take a touch around former Rapids goalkeeper William Yarbrough and draws a penalty. Kind of 50-50 for me, Mark, but I understand why it was called and why VAR did not have the referee go to the monitor. Navajo steps up his now patented short run-up and takes a very, very good penalty. After that, Mark, I would say that the Quakes were the better team in the first half. I don't know whether or not we can attribute that to the Rapids getting a goal and then understanding the game state, or if the goal then initiated a response from San Jose, or is this just the signal that we've been seeing throughout the course of this entire season where the Rapids start out really, really good, and then after 15 or 20 minutes, the opponent then has a response, albeit this was the best of those that we've had because that really good start actually led to a goal for the Rapids. But in any case, Pellegrino with a couple of shots, Mark, I thought he had a really good opportunity on that curler to the far post. It ended up being wide. Christian Espinoza was absolutely trying to cook. Jeremy Abobasi kind of had a really poor night for me, Mark. The best opportunity the Quakes had probably was that dummy sequence where Rodriguez comes in, runs up, and then tries to get a shot on that cross from Carpo. I'm not sure how to say his name. And then he misses it almost so much, Mark, that I thought it was an intentional dummy, so much so that it faked Jeremy Abobasi, who then didn't know what to do when the ball actually came to him. And Pellegrino gets the ball, and the shot is relatively routinely blocked by Andreas Maxu. Kind of a back and forth game, Mark, a basketball game for me in the second half, and it was kind of just dependent on who was going to end up getting that first goal. You know, the Quakes had that really good opportunity a couple minutes in off of the corner where Stefan makes that save on Morales on the header at the near post, and the Rapids get the goal on their first big opportunity of the half in the 60th minute when finally, after 1,560 to 61 minutes of play, Rafael Navajo scores from the run of play off of a corner. The Rapids win it back. Georgi Mihailovic gets it forward, ball into the box from Rosenberry, and it kind of pings around. Bassett gets a header onto it but doesn't finish. He wants a handball immediately, and the ball's just kind of standing there waiting for somebody to do something, and it's Navajo tapping it in on William Yarbrough. The Quakes hit the crossbar a few times, Mark. Sakaris, the midfielder, the substitute, he comes in, but then the Rapids put the game away in the 81st minute off of a throw-in, and just a nice, really good setup from Navajo to Cole Bassett to get out of tight quarters with a bunch of defenders, and then Bassett does a very, very good dribble into the space and then buries the corner. Mark, I don't know what it is. Cole Bassett seems to like bottom right or bottom left corner, depending on which side of the field is. He likes going opposite corner, bottom corner. I've seen that on set pieces. I've seen that from the right play, and it's absolutely working. And Mark, the Rapids get out of there, dodge, you know, 3-0 win, and you know, happy days. The Colorado Rapids went in and played a struggling team that if you want to make the playoffs, you should beat and you should dominate from the scoreline, and the Rapids did that. Rabbi Mark Goodman, good things.
I was just going to say, Jonathan Lewis likes that near post kind of shot where he like cuts across his body with the shot and comes near post, low and hard. And Cole Bassett is kind of low and hard to the outside post, no matter whether he's on the right or the left. That was a great rundown, Matt. Really, really captured all of the great moments of the game. I thought about that moment, the missed dummy that you mentioned, as Abobasi megging himself, because the guy before him dummied the ball, and when it got to Abobasi, he just was not ready for it at all, which, to your point, he didn't have a good game. But it was interesting because folks in the box, the other San Jose guys who were covering, they weren't as horrified by that as I was. I just looked at that entire sequence and meant you have to score there. You absolutely have to score there. I also thought when Amal Pellegrino missed that curler, I also thought, you have to score there. And then there was one other shot that looped off of the crossbar where there was just so much space for the shooter. I don't remember who it was. It might have been Espinoza. And I just thought, you have to score there. And if you go back and look at the XG, San Jose beat the Rapids for expected goals. The Rapids expected goals from run of play was also even lower than that because, of course, a PK, depending on which metric you're using, is worth either 0.77 or 0.73 expected goals, and they got one of those. So, you know, if you were playing this game as who created the better chances, it was San Jose, but the Rapids took their chances. That's my good thing. And that's the most important thing, which is when you play a team like San Jose that don't have good finishing and you have a little bit better finishing, it starts to show that you have some progress year over year from 22 to 23 and 23 to 24. Matt, go ahead.
Who's the worst finishers in the league now, Rapids haters? Okay. So to your point, Mark, I have the stats down. Rabbi, I am, for the time being, no longer paying attention to the XG stats that we're getting from MLSsoccer.com. American Soccer Analysis is kind of out on some of the stuff going on with the algorithm going on that. So I'm trusting FotMob right now, Mark, and not just because Holding the High Line shows up on the Rapids news feed on FotMob. But so in any case, they had it as San Jose with 2.38, and then they had the Rapids at 1.92. So let's take out, what do you say, 0.8, Mark, for the penalty. So let's call it 1.1, 1.2 for the Rapids from the run of play. And then San Jose. So San Jose should have gotten two goals, potentially one, and the Rapids would have been slightly lucky to get two goals. And certainly the Rapids getting three massively outperformed their XG. San Jose Earthquake getting shut out massively underperformed.
Right, but overperforming your XG is an important thing to do on occasion, and teams that win in MLS outperform their expected goals. That's how you...
Correct.
This is because I've been nerding out about XG for at least 5 years now. If you go year over year and you just take teams that create a lot of expected goals and meet expectations, they score almost at the rate of expected goals, that usually puts you in just like the fifth to eighth best teams in MLS. The best teams in MLS overperform expected goals. By that, I mean they have finishers who finish at above average rates. It's not luck, it is skill. So that's just my kind of caveat here.
Absolutely. But so, Mark, I'm going to highlight some individuals who I think, you know, deserve some kudos. And then we can, my bad thing or kind of a mid thing I have is a response to your comments about the XG and the chances and the finishing. So Rafael Navajo, Mark, with a brace, no question for me, man of the match. If it wasn't for that spectacular golazo that Messi scores to help Inter Miami win, you know, in Chiefs Kingdom against Sporting Kansas City, he probably wins. I think he finishes second for player of the week for me in Major League Soccer. And fantastic, Mark, that it's now, what, it's three goals in four games, and he's 3 for 3 on penalties, and he's more dangerous, and that the chance creation and the attacking and the now scoring for the run of play, Mark, he's not doing that whilst sacrificing any of the other stuff that we like about what he does. The pressing, the defensive work rate and everything, the intercepting, and then his fouling has also been really, really good. And we've been a little critical at times, Mark, of the inconsistency of his link-up play. And he had a really nice, albeit a simple pass to Cole Bassett in order for Bassett to score the goal. Now, it's not like Navajo did all of the work and then gave, you know, Cole Bassett a tap in, but that was a moment to where he did something right that ultimately led to a net positive for the team. So I think now Rapids fans are just hoping, like, okay, like, let's see you do it again. Let's see it consistently. Can you score a goal from the run of play against FC Dallas that isn't a tap in or isn't a penalty? And if he starts doing that, Mark, maybe there's just enough time for him to go on a nice run of form, have this be his David Goss theorem of, you know, him finally being settled in with the team, being settled in tactically, and then that leading to him being worthy of the $4.5 million price tag that's coming up for him in June, July. Zach Steffen with the clean sheet, Mark, bunch of really, really good saves that you mentioned. Part of San Jose's poor finishing or poor underperforming their XG was because Zach Steffen made a lot of really good saves. Saves that, by the way, Mark, I do not believe a William Yarbrough either in 2023 or 2024 would have made as well. I feel so bad for Will, Mark, watching that game, to be honest with you. Like, he's just been, he was on a bad team. He tried really hard. He was the captain and everything with Price and with Rubio out. And then he just gets traded to the only team in MLS that's maybe worse than the Rapids this year. Womp womp. Yep. Wayne Frederick, Rabbi, is coming on, you know, albeit, you know, with the game already gone at that point, but from the 4 or 5 minutes that we saw, he didn't immediately look out of place. And so I continue to see good things in training and good things in Rapids 2 games and Rapids 2 appearances from KSB, from now Wayne Frederick II, and from Nate Jones that suggests to me that all three of those players were good acquisitions via the draft and have the potential to contribute to the first team in the long term. And the fact that they are getting opportunities is a reflection of their quality. I don't know, Mark, that Wayne Frederick, I think very clearly KSB is a tier above the other two right now in terms of the depth chart. I think if Jasper Lofelsen was not hurt, I think if Kamani Stewart-Baines didn't have that illness, then we would not have seen Marlon Vargas and Wayne Frederick on the bench. But the fact that Chris Armas is willing to give them opportunities, same thing for a Jackson Travis, I think speaks to a level of trust and belief in their potential going forward. And then last personnel that I'll call out, Mark, you know, Rabbi, we're all lost in the sauce on Moise Bombito, and deservedly so. But is it not worth saying that Andreas Maxu is on a fantastic run of form and, like, quietly next to the Canadian that we're all enamored with, understandably, that he's just kind of quietly been really, really solid? And Mark, I feel like if this is the version of Andreas Maxu that we're getting, and if he continues this run of form, and if he was making $500,000 a year, I don't think anybody would be complaining about the acquisition of him or the player that he's bringing, even with him being an international player. And so I don't think it's a coincidence that all of these players getting more time, getting a few results that give them confidence, even if they're potentially conflicting, or that those results are maybe a false positive given the other things going around there, that we see good performances that lead to good results against a team that they absolutely needed to beat. Moving on to bad things or mid things here, Mark, to your point about the XG, the one response I would have to that, we see all of this in hockey, Mark, and I'm going to say some terms that don't mean anything to you, but the Avalanche, the Av sickos, given that hockey playoffs are about to start, know the terms Corsi and Fenwick, which crudely track shot attempts or shots on goal, stuff like that, and then that is a measure of possession or where the tilt of the field is, if you will. There's other metrics that hockey has that works for hockey that I won't go into. But so you see regularly, Mark, that when a team goes down by goals, they start chasing the game. The opponent is more conservative, and then the team that is trailing is a little bit more shot happy. And so I think it is worth pointing out, when the road team scores, comes out, is dominating the first 10 minutes and scores a goal, that understandably you see a response, but you also, that response is the away team understanding that they're going to see a response from the home team, and then also protecting maybe a Sean Dice defense to give up a lot of low quality opportunities. And then the opponent is also going to be a little bit more shot happy. Now, to your point, Rabbi, those were good opportunities. Christian Espinoza on another night could have had a brace. Pellegrino probably could have had a goal in this game. Jeremy Obobese, that's one of the worst games that I've seen for him with San Jose. But I think that's worth understanding. So if the way that Chris Normus chooses to frame that with the team when they go into, you know, their film sessions this week is, we did a really good job managing the result given what the scoreline was and everything, but here's a few things that we could do a little bit better so that even if we don't have the ball or the opponent is chasing the game, it's happening on our terms in ways that I don't think that they always had control in the second half of the first half. And there were plenty of times when it was 1-0, when it was 2-0, when it was 3-0, when the Rapids were not controlling the game. Last thing that I have on this, Mark, Georgi Mihailovic is trying really hard, and I'm starting to wonder if maybe he's trying a little bit too hard in terms of when he gets the ball, being really aggressive and trying to do things all on his own. And there were a couple tackles on him, Mark, that maybe took him out of the game that he didn't get, and he got a little emotionally frustrated as well. So I thought, you know, look, he creates the turnover that leads to the penalty, which opens the game up for the Rapids, certainly, but there's a mixed bag of stuff that's going on around with him, and that seems to be happening independently of other players playing well or playing poorly. And I'm still waiting for MLS dark horse, CF Montreal, Georgi Mihailovic from 2022 to show up for this Rapids team. Mark, any bad things, any big things for you?
So one other good thing, which was Cole Bassett getting a goal again in consecutive weeks and from the run of play again, and late in the game, which, you know, really shows this is a kid who, he was absolutely forged in Colorado, right? Like, it's those big Colorado lungs that he gets from, the high altitude that he's like absolutely fantastic after minute 75. For a midfielder, that is a remarkable thing. I'm starting to think that, and this is going to sound, I didn't like it at first, but I'm starting to like it a lot. I really am starting to like him deep in the double pivot.
I agree.
Alongside
Ollie was good for another game as well, Mark.
Ollie was great. I've been kicking around which of the three between Ollie and Cole and Moyes Bombito to interview. I'm leaning towards Moyes just because I haven't interviewed him before. But it would be I just thought that the two of them both had really good games again. It was very impressive. Bad thing was that somehow San Jose seemed to have no trouble getting from transition into, or even from their final third, their own third, into the Rapids third, from roughly minute 20 to minute 45. So Colorado were just back on their heels for 25 minutes and really struggled. They also struggled out of the locker room from minute 46 to minute 60. And I think that was something to start worrying about, that both the defense and the defensive midfield didn't quite figure out how to spread themselves and pick men up and win the duels and win the headers. So that was just a concern. Your point, though, before, Matt, about Max So looking really, really good. This was the first game that he played without his mask after the broken nose a couple weeks ago. I asked the Rapids staff person in the press box, kind of like off the record, so I won't name them, what the story was with that. And her response was, "He's just a beast." And I just really like that he'd been he'd been practicing without it. And I think we could tell from the way he was dealing with balls in the first game he played with the mask that it limited his visibility. He was struggling with it a little. And I think he just went, forget it. Broken nose, not broken nose, doctor recommendation, whatever. I'm playing an MLS game. I'll make sure that I play my best game and I won't wear the mask. So I think that was great. Zach Steffen was a joy to talk to in the post game presser. He was definitely feeling confident. He's really good with kind of the all credit to the team, you know, it was a team effort. That was a really nice kind of like, my exposure to him, just kind of learning that he's that guy. Big thing for this team is, the team, the thing coming off of the first seven games, we're through the difficult part of the season. We're into the part of the season where we're supposed to kind of win these next couple games because we're playing weak teams. I think we knew at the beginning of the season San Jose wasn't going to be very good. I didn't think we knew they were going to be this bad. I think we knew at the beginning of the season that FC Dallas was kind of a middling team. They're currently 13th in the Western Conference. I didn't think they were going to be this bad, right? Like, so we're now in a situation where people expect something of the Colorado Rapids, which flashback to last year, nobody expected anything from us at all. Even like 5-6 games into the season. Now we play games where people expect us to win, and that's a good thing. And I think this team actually operates just fine with those expectations. One last thing, I don't know if this is media training or if this is like an off the cuff narrative that Chris Armas is toying with. But he said a lot in his post-game comments about this is a young team. It's an exciting team. You know, it's these guys are fresh and energetic, and you know they're young. They're young. They're young. It was kind of one of the main talking points of the post-game, and it's really interesting to me to see: are we just kind of trying to like measure and moderate expectation to say there'll be ups and there'll be downs. Like, I wasn't exactly sure why that was the kind of thrust talking point here. I don't mind it. I actually think it's a great selling point for the team. They're young, they're local, they're homegrown. Watch us grow over the next couple of years. Maybe it's Chris Armas's way of saying, we're going to win some, we're going to lose some. Don't expect us to win MLS Cup this year. I don't know. Maybe it's a subtle thing, but it was just something I noticed also, which is to say, as much as I'm getting excited about this Colorado Rapids team this year, it feels a little bit like it's still building blocks to the next thing.
As we like to say, Mark, happiness is measured by expectations, and I am fully expecting, and I cannot wait to see, Mark, how the Rapids fail spectacularly in the final 10 games of the season to finish 10th on goal difference. To your point, Rabbi, you got a 3-0 win against a bad team, a team that we think is bad, that was certainly bad down on a bad run of form. And this is the type of game that, again, a playoff team would have absolutely won. Mark, I don't know if you, I'm going to assume you didn't stay up to see the scoreline of what LA Galaxy did against Vancouver Whitecaps, but like, I would have expected LA Galaxy would have walked away comfortably with that win. You know, Messi and Busquets would have been jogging it out at most by the 65th minute with a 3-0 lead as well. And so that was the most important thing. The result of getting the win was the most important thing. And in that regard, I care more about the scoreline a little bit than the underlying issues, which are still present. But those are things that you can work your way through over the course of a period of time. When you play a bad team that you need to pick up points against, the most important thing is getting the win. As you mentioned, we probably are going to feel similarly going into this Dallas game on Saturday as we felt this time last week going into San Jose. Rabbi, to your point about Zach Steffen, I don't think that there's a lot of green flags that come with goalkeepers, but certainly them almost refusing in like an ironic way to take credit for a clean sheet is absolutely a green flag. So more good stuff going on with Zach Steffen, and just the energy that you hear, Mark, that I see in training, that we hear in post-game media availability, that we see on the pitch as well. I don't think there's any question that regardless of some of the tactical issues that we have or what's going on with Georgi Mihailovic or why aren't the wingers goal dangerous just yet, you know, Kevin Cabral had a really nice game from a possession and defensive standpoint, he's still not creating anything threatening on goal. So there's still underlying issues. I'm increasingly not convinced that this is a pressing team, Mark, but I don't think there's any question from a cultural standpoint of this team is together. They are united. They like each other. They are playing for each other. The keep fighting mantra of this team has absolutely been restored, Mark. And one of the founding pillars of anything that the Rapids are going to achieve in MLS, given their financial situation, is they have to have the power of friendship on their side. And so they absolutely have that. Rabbi,
I was just going to say really quick, if you want to, either you could have the worst twin striker pairing, or these two players should have a competition for the end of the season for who could produce the most expected goals and the fewest actual goals between Kevin Cabral and Amal Pellegrino. The two of them are misfiring like the worst 38 specials out of the worst gangster movies ever. They are freaking stormtroopers at this point, man. But Amal Pellegrino was like, you know, they have absolutely lost all confidence in this guy. And I think that that is really where Kevin Cabral has also been. So just a note, it could always be worse, or at least another way of saying it is there are other teams with their own versions of Kevin Cabral elsewhere in the league. Back to you, Matt.
Rapids fans, you have a right to be happy. Celebrate this, be happy about this, be excited going into Saturday. And, you know, there is a small sliver of hope. Just in time, Mark, for us to get disappointed, obviously. Rabbi, always. We've got some personnel news to discuss that's a little bit dated, but we podcasted early last week. But before we do that, tell our listeners how they can best support our work at HTHL.
Folks, we are supported by our happy Highliners. Those are the folks who help out by chipping in a little bit of money to the kitty to help make this show work. It offsets some of the costs we make in producing the show. It also ultimately results in us sharing the love with our listeners. All of our supporting Highliners at the $48 a year or $96 Founders Club membership level get a piece of swag. We send out a t-shirt this year, some performance shirts in camo gray or in black. And last year it was a pint glass. We were talking about doing mugs again, if only because mugs always wind up having really funny quotes on the side, something like that. So, but anyways, we really appreciate all of our support from our Highliners. So if you are one, give yourself a pat on the back. We really appreciate you. If you are not a supporting Highliner, you should subscribe to our Substack. That's the way to find out more about how to support both the podcast and the written content. The Substack has all of my writing stuff and a few bonus pieces from Matt. Every once in a while, he does the bulk of his writing over at Burgundy Wave, where he is the aforementioned managing editor. But we also appreciate those of you who just join in on the free subscription level. Subscribe to our Substack and you'll get all of our written goodness right in your box. Also, do all the other good stuff of liking and subscribing. You'll see all of our stuff posted on Reddit every time we get a new article up. We're on Facebook at Holding the High Line. And of course, you can still find us on the Twitter machine, aka X. So make sure you're following us in all those places because it helps expand our brand. Lastly, as Matt noted last week when he was talking to some folks who were away for the away game at Miami, they had never heard of Burgundy Wave. They had never heard of Holding the High Line. And we had to educate these friends about all the wonderful ways of consuming soccer content. So educate people, tell us about them. And don't forget, if you got a sticker with your t-shirt, go and put it on a lift pole somewhere in a ski mountain near you. The larger stickers are going out to Matt this week before I forget. There's some small stickers, though. They're probably good for your kid's lunchbox. Back to you, Matt.
Yeah, no, to your point, Mark, maybe we need to do we need to find a way to like get a booth at like the tailgate or something? Should we make ourselves available at halftime? We got to do some better PR here, folks, in terms of reminding people that there are podcasts and outlets that are covering this team, certainly. And you can help be a part of that by telling your Rapids and soccer curious friends about that. And worst case scenario, you go find which of your coworkers don't care about soccer at all and are annoyed by you talking about soccer, in which case then you found out which coworkers you should not like as much anymore. Okay, Mark, this past week we got some player news. We'll start with the simpler one, which is that Jasper Löffelsson, the German holding midfielder for the Colorado Rapids, has signed an extension through 2025, and then he also has a team option for 2026. He previously was just under contract for this year. That 2024 was a team option that Real Salt Lake took exercised before trading him then a few months later into the offseason. And then there was an option for just 2025. So effectively, listeners, the Rapids have already picked up that option for 2025 and then given Jasper an option for 2026. And Mark, I would not be shocked, given where Jasper is in the salary standpoint, that there's maybe a little bit more of a bump there. But Mark, it's also kind of a short-term deal. So we look at Ollie LaRoz, who's on an option year as well. And, you know, TBD on the Lamine Diok situation, who subbed on and looked okay against San Jose Earthquakes, but he continues to not unseat Ollie LaRoz, who's on a one-year deal and couldn't sniff the first team last season at all. Mark, how do we like Jasper. We also haven't seen a whole lot of him. And how much of this, Mark, is just the Rapids like holding their cards of like the, we want three or four options in holding midfield. One of them's going to work out and be good by the time we're hopefully good next year.
Offelson's a low-cost, easy alternative. And he's also, I think the other thing that you look at with Ollie LaRoz is perhaps LaRoz grows and gets, more successful and more established, and teams in Europe, like they did with Cole Bassett, like they did with Sam Vines, start sniffing about and showing some interest in the kid. I don't have a sense that LaRoz wants to test the waters. He feels like a kid who's happy to be in MLS, but Löffelsson does have the ability to be sold abroad because he's a German national. I think at the end of the day, the Rapids did what they tend to do in their market, the way they construct teams, which is, if you're not going to have an expensive player at a position like defensive midfielder, then you kind of like spread your losses. You pick up four players who can all play the position, who are all equally inexpensive, and then you see which one works out. That's how basically, I think LaRoz was probably the biggest surprise. I expected the depth chart to go Loftelson, Diak, Larraz. I had my fingers crossed that it would be Ali, but considering he spent his whole time last year with the Cobras, I didn't expect him to get much time this year. So it's all gravy, man. There's no downside to this at all. So you're right, though. Great observation about the short term of the deal. It's a one and one, right? It's a mm-hmm. 1 year plus a club option for an extra year.
And then this past week, Mark, we kind of already knew that this was happening, Rabbi. I saw Dylan Cerna was at the homegrown announcement for Adam Beaudry, and asked what he was up to, and he said that he was working at Golf Tech, which totally tracks given where Dylan Cerna was in the golf hierarchy back when he was with the first team. But in any case, Mark, former Rapids homegrown midfielder, winger, left back at times, has officially announced his retirement. He was 30 years old, played 105 games in MLS play for the Rapids, 54 starts, 5,302 minutes, 9 goals, 7 assists. Didn't get a red card, only 8 yellow cards I'm looking at here on his MLS player bio. Spent a year on loan, Mark, or spent a year with Colorado Springs Switchbacks. He spent a year then in, I think it was the second division. I think it was USL at the time. I don't think it had become the championship just yet with Sporting Kansas City 2. That is the only time that he was ever with a club professionally outside of the state of Colorado. And the only other year he would have been outside the Rapids organization was the year he spent with Switchbacks, where he had one of several kind of ambiguous, undescribed injuries that had surgery and then just quietly got shut down in the second half of the year, Mark. And then he came back and he spent 2 years as one of the old heads on the bench for Rapids too, and Eric Boucher always spoke well of him. But Mark, I think it was time, you know, an ACL injury, a broken leg and everything. Rapids too chose not to pick up his contract. And at this point, given his family's here, his wife's here and everything, he's got a house, like, the, you know, do you, Mark, would he want to go, even if he wouldn't get, you know, are Richmond Kickers in the USL League One, Mark? Because yes. I don't think he's getting on a championship team. So yeah, does he want to go, does he want to move out of state again to go make, what, 40, 50K? A year playing for a USL League One team, or, you know, does another next pro team come in for him? I think it was time. He gets to be around the club and everything, and he was a good person. He was a good steward of the club. He set a lot of homegrown records that, you know, now sense that Cole Bassett and Sam Vines have broken, and by the time the two of them and Sebastian Anderson are no longer playing for the Colorado Rapids, I don't think Dylan Cerna will have a lot of those stats, but, you know, Dylan paved the way for that. He was part of the iterative process of the Rapids homegrown and academy process, and Mark, I don't know if you saw the video that got put out on the Rapids socials, but, you know, Dylan kind of wrote a letter to the Rapids community, and one of the things that he said was is that, you know, as a player, he looked up in the stands and saw a bunch of young kids who were super excited about soccer, and he said, I see me in you. Like, the I'm like Dylan Cerna has played in an MLS soccer game, Mark, at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, and he saw a kid who will go on to be a Colorado Rapids homegrown player. I feel very, very confident that has happened. And so for Dylan Cerna to say that, maybe at one point there was a Cole Bassett or a Sam Vines or a Sebastian Anderson or an Adam Beaudry that was one of those kids as well, to where then now Cole and the others are doing that for the next generation speaks well of it. I think the unfortunate thing, Mark, was that injuries hampered him at times, and I question, you know, whether or not he was ultimately good enough in MLS. I think ultimately the thing that that was probably most problematic is that he wasn't a specialist at any one position, so he wasn't able to elevate and secure one particular role. So he got tried out at a bunch of positions that were kind of already a pain point and problematic, and he never really got to stick out. That's football. It happens in everything. I like Dylan Cerna as a person, Mark, and I will have nothing but good things to say of him going forward. And I look forward to shaking his hand and saying congratulations on your retirement the next time I see him in person.
That was fantastic. That was a tribute to Dylan Cerna that was worthy and really covered it perfectly, Matt. I'll just add, Dylan Cerna is a player who I have covered every minute of his career. I started writing about the Colorado Rapids when in his first year in 2013, I really started writing in 2014. But I remember in the early years of Burgundy Wave that we wrote, when I wrote the first couple back passes, the first year that he was kind of starting, which really was, I believe 2014 was the year he had the most minutes in all of his MLS career, 1,711, according to FootMob. And he was 19 years old. And it was an interesting year. The Rapids were bad, as they often are. And, you know, getting a homegrown on the field seemed like a good idea. We're probably not going to win MLS Cup, so let's just see what we can do here. And Pablo Mastroeni was in that first year where he was trying to figure stuff out. Serna came on as a young player and filled in at left wing in the 4-2-3-1 or the 4-4-2, depending on what was being played. And he looked great. And then one week we were short a left back because Mark Birch, I think in 2014, was up and down with injuries. And Serna filled in at left back. And he had a game where he was great at left back. And a bunch of us up in the box, well, actually, I wasn't in the box back then. I was in a season ticket. A bunch of us were talking about on chat groups and so on that maybe Dylan Serna was the heir apparent at left back. Maybe he was, that was the position. He was going to be a forward-looking, modern, attacking, overlapping left back in Major League Soccer. And it was going to really work for him. And he had exactly one good game at left back. And then the next week, he played left back. And it was a horror show. He was terrible. He just kept getting beat defensively up and down the field because Serna was mostly a left midfielder. You know, he wasn't really, his defensive chops weren't quite up to snuff. He couldn't be played in the middle of the field, as you were pointing out before too, Matt. He didn't kind of have those swivel skills. He was left foot dominant. He was really talented, but he wasn't the kind of player who you looked at him and you couldn't tell which was his dominant foot. You could tell. The other thing about Dylan Serna was his speed was an incredible asset. And when he had his first ACL injury, I think in 2015 or 2016, you know, that takes away a little bit of your speed. And, you know, to be honest, he was never the same after that first thing. However, I will remember him incredibly fondly. He was a classy guy. He worked really hard to get back on the pitch after his knee injury. I saw him at training week after week when I went out to training, when he was just going in and working with the trainer and the PT and getting healthy again. I talked to him a bunch of times, had a great attitude, really nice guy. And I will remember him for all the things he gave to the Rapids. I will not remember him based on what he could have achieved or what he might have accomplished, because there, but for the grace of God, go all of us. Any one of us coulda, woulda, shoulda in our entire lives about a whole bunch of things. What if I had dated that girl? What if I had taken that job? What if I hadn't, you know, broken my foot before the big race? We all have those moments. But Dylan Serna should be proud of all the things he accomplished, and I am proud of him.
Yeah, well said, Mark. Listeners, for those of you who are relatively new to the club or don't remember the early part of Dylan Serna, where maybe he had a little bit of hype, Mark, do you remember what year? What was the year that he scored that absolute banger in the blue Colorado flag kits at RFK against FC Dallas? Like, does 2015, does that sound right?
Like 2015. That feels like 2015. I remember that game. That was a funny game because that was a season where we were playing Danny Wilson at defensive midfielder.
That was before, this would have been before Danny.
Oh, then a different game. I'm having acid flashbacks.
In any case,
take your word for it. Yeah.
For those of you who want to remember only the good parts or the best parts of Dylan Serna, Google Dylan Serna, DC United, and it'll probably be the first YouTube hit to come up. Mark, let's get to our preview. This coming Saturday, 4:20, the Colorado Rapids will be hosting FC Dallas. Dallas, Mark, as you mentioned, are down bad. They are 13th in the Western Conference. They have 5 points on 7 games played, 1 win, 4 losses, and 2 draws. They have a goal difference of -4, and they are 0-2-1 on the road this season. Colorado Rapids, Mark, up to 5th in the Western Conference, 12 points off of 8 games played, 3-2-3, and a +1 goal difference. Mark, I can't remember the last time the Rapids had a positive goal difference, and at home, the Rapids have an even 3-3-3 record. Mark, normally when we talk about FC Dallas, we would talk about sometimes USMNT forward Jesus Ferreira up top. We would talk about Alan Velasco absolutely cooking in the midfield, but FC Dallas, similar to the San Jose Earthquakes last week, were a little bit banged up. They have a head injury to one of their fullbacks, Marco Farfan. Paxton Pomykal, Mark, who at one point you and I were petitioning for the Rapids to try and trade for, again, has an injury situation. He's out with a knee. Alan Velasco was out with a knee injury as well, and Jesus Ferreira was questionable, ended up not playing in their 0-0 draw against Seattle Sounders at home last Saturday. Jesus Ferreira out with a hamstring injury. So in lieu of that, Mark, we see Paul Musa, their big acquisition from this offseason, up top in a lone striker situation. It's a 3-4-2-1, Mark, that for me plays more like a 5-2-3, if I'm being completely honest with you. Sebastian Legette in one of the ride roles. Paul Areola is there as well. They both have kind of gone downhill a little bit for me, Mark, in the last 2 years. And then their midfield, the central midfield without Velasco and without Pomykal, is just a gaping hole of opportunity, Mark. It's been Frazier and Delgado there. And then their back line is also kind of suspect. You know, Junqua, I think, is a decent MLS center back, Mark, but old man Omar Gonzalez, who I think is probably turning 40 years old in the next 20 minutes, is out there starting in central defense. And then Ibiaga, the outcast of the LAFC defense from their MLS Cup win a few years ago, is there as well. Mark, this is a bad team, as you mentioned, that's not playing particularly well. They're playing relatively pragmatic and boring soccer. They are old and slow in defense. They do not have the bite or the technical qualities on the ball in midfield. And so pretty much maybe the only concern I have, Mark, because we've seen other teams go after it, is we've seen opponents tend to prioritize going down their right, the Rapids' left. If I think about Christian Espinoza being more aggressive in terms of being direct last week against Sam Vines, we saw that with RSL as well. We saw it a bit at times with Miami. And so that right side for FC Dallas, the left for the Rapids, has typically been Paul Areola and Sebastian Legette, who at times have done good things against the Rapids. But, you know, Mark, Musa came in with a lot of fanfare. I had him on my fantasy team opening week, expecting him to score a bunch of goals, expecting him to play well with Jesus Ferreira. And Ferreira no está aquí, Velasco no está aquí. And so Paul Musa's there. And so kind of similar to some of the other one-dimensional opponents that we've seen, if you cut off connections to that striker and you don't give any big open looks, then you should probably be okay. Mark, what do we see in FC Dallas? And this is a game the Rapids had better win convincingly, yeah?
I think so. I mean, they come in probably hungry. There's a lot to prove at this point, and they're starting to get into coaching hot seat space as well. 28th in goals per match out of 29 teams in the league. They are 20th in possession, 48%. When you are a team that has lost as many games as Dallas and you are losing possession, that is really striking, because you are probably playing from behind most of your games. Most teams concede the ball when they have a lead. They say, I'm up 1-0, I'm up 2-0. You have the ball. See if you can do anything with it. So far, they can't do anything with it. Musa has no goals on the season. He has one assist. You mentioned all the injured players. That's an interesting point. You mentioned the struggles of Legette and
Paul Areola.
Areola, right? Two former USMNT wingers who, you know, the wing ages worse than every other position because speed is their calling card. And if they don't have it anymore, then they've got to rely upon bending and crosses. They've got to rely upon, you know, possession and control. Players in the middle of the pitch, they age a little bit more gracefully than players on the edges of the pitch. So it's a real challenge for Dallas. I don't really know tactically how to fix them right now. I will be honest, I have not watched anything but highlights from them. I can just tell you the basics of where they're at in terms of their stats and their personnel. But
don't watch the highlights from the Seattle game from last Saturday, Mark. There were no highlights.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I think and that's really the point, which is you have to produce things. But highlights are highlights. I mean, every team, you know, looks good on the few shots that they've taken that blister the net or kind of curl and get batted away at the last second. But if you're not possessing enough of the ball and you're not goal dangerous, it's going to be really difficult. So for the Rapids, it's really simple for them. They have to defend at an average clip. Moise Bombito has to kind of rebound from this last week, which was a little shaky. The entire back line, though, overwhelmingly for the last couple weeks have been lights out. This Colorado Rapids team probably should just come out, try and score a goal in the first 30 minutes, and then be very content to kind of go toe-to-toe and then eventually lock up shop. I mean, I think this is a probably straightforward 2-1 or 2-0 win for Colorado. These goal explosions that they've had the last couple weeks, I wouldn't bet the farm on them. But that being said, we say things on this podcast so that you can go bet in your online betting app completely against us and go in a different direction. So if I'm saying, if the over-under is 3.5 and I'm saying take the under, you probably could make a little bit of money by taking the over, because I love being wrong when money's on the line.
I had 2-0 before you even said it, Mark. So that's the scoreline that I'm going with. I will say that we get another goal from Rafael Navajo, and I think we get an unlikely goal scorer, probably from a set piece or a broken play. You know, maybe one of the wingers just, you know, bangs in, like how Hoffa's goal from the run of play was a broken play, but he was in the right spot in the right time.
Right.
Maybe we get that from a Calvin Harris or an Omer Fernandez or one of those types of players.
See Omer Fernandez have a goal. He's had little moments here and there. He was a little, you know, not so much as last week, but there's quality there. He's got some real talent. I think the kid's going to break good eventually.
Yeah, so, but I agree with you, Mark, where I think Dallas probably comes in, is playing conservative, similar to how the Nashville game went, where they'd probably be perfectly content for a 0-0 or a 1-1 draw, and it's just about the Rapids not being countered against and guarding against that, which I think the Rapids have proven are in a good position to deal with that and prevent that. And then I think the next thing is just breaking down a low block, and normally if it was a Gary Smith team, or if it was a team that's coming in, you know, and playing with a proper five-man back line, Mark. But, you know, like, Omar Gonzalez is big and tall, and he will win headers against Rafael Navajo, but, you know, he's not the same player that he was. And as I mentioned, the Dallas midfield is absolute Swiss cheese. So if you are looking for another game for Georgi Mihailovic to move, be energetic, find space, and then create with space, that should absolutely be fine. And, Mark, I would not be shocked at all if we see some of the best cooking, three-star Michelin quality from Ollie LaRoz and from Cole Bassett, given the state of this FC Dallas midfield. And if the Rapids are good on the ball, and if they're able to create space, I think eventually they will create a high-quality opportunity that someone will be able to finish. Dallas will have to come out of their shell, and I don't have any confidence in what Dallas is doing, provided you mark Musa and prevent him from doing anything. And given what we've seen from Moise Bombito and from Andreas Maxumark against a Jeremy Abobasi, against a Dennis Bawanga, against a Lionel Messi, I have every confidence that they will be able to handle what the Hungarian, I can't remember where Moose is from. Let's look this up, because I'm going to want to know this before the game on Saturday.
Poland?
Pitar Musa is from Croatia. So I guess he's from, he might have been playing in Poland. You might have that correct, Mark, but he is from Zagreb, Croatia. So maybe he knows Luka Modric. I'm not sure. Mark, shall we move on to Ask HTHLs? Any other? So Rabbi, you had 2-1. Give me your Rapids goal scores. We're pulling a DNVR here.
We're pulling a DNVR. I love it. Well, let's say Omer Fernandez breaks the duck, and Ollie LaRoz, which is going to be uncommon goal scorers left, right, and center for me.
Okay. There's not any more former FC Dallas players on the Rapids now that I think about it, Mark. So this the, I don't know if we're, are we calling this the Drew Moore Derby on, I don't know if we need a name for this rivalry given how long it's been going on, but the Oscar Pereja Derby. Ooh, that'll get some people feeling some things. So, Mark, we've got a couple Ask HTHLs. We will start with Meredith, who's asking, Mark, if dogs played soccer Air Bud style, should they get to play the ball with all four of their paws, or is playing the ball with their front paws considered a handball? Mark, for four-legged creatures playing soccer, how should we think about them and their ability to play the ball?
Man, this is the is a hot dog a sandwich of soccer, isn't it?
Is an ice cream taco a sandwich, Rabbi Mark Goodman? Yes, no.
I don't think tacos are sandwiches. I really don't think so at all. I think a dog should be able to play this with every part of their body. That is, it just seems logical to me. They have 4 feet. They don't have arms. Now, if monkeys were playing it, it would be a different story. But we're not talking about monkeys. We're talking about tacos and hot dogs and dog football. And dog football is played with all 4 limbs. Matt?
I agree with you, Rabbi. I will say it's an evolutionary biology, like, you know, what did it evolve from? And so the front paws don't have any more advantage than the back paws in terms of, like you said, they don't have thumbs. There's not any more mobility. There's not like a wrist component to it. And then there's not like the mobility that we have with like a shoulder blade that like primates have in terms of the mobility of that. Fundamentally, a dog is running and their paws are all contributing to that. It's called football. We say that dogs have 4 feet or 4 paws, therefore they should be able to play it with their with that. But to your point, Rabbi, I think if primates were playing, like how we see chimpanzees can run on all fours as well, I think the back feet should only be allowed to play the ball. And similarly, I think if we had birds playing soccer if we had birds playing soccer, I think also they should only be allowed to play with their feet. And Mark, I think we have certain advantages if humans were playing against dogs in terms of like we could shove off, or the physicality or the ability that we have to jump just evolutionarily, given our biology and our anatomy, we have certain advantages in ways that somewhere in the bird, in the bird kingdom is a bird that has talons that are big enough to where they could pick up a soccer ball and then fly with it and nobody else would be able to catch up to them. I think the advantage that dogs would have compared to the disadvantage they would have in this Animal Kingdom Zoo FC pickup game would be being able to run on all fours. We'll go to questions that we now have, Mark, from Twitter. And so firstly, Rabbi, Jared Geisler wants to know where your blood pressure is at, given what happened to Arsenal earlier today.
Oh, yeah, Arsenal starting on top and finishing second is a thing that keeps happening, and I'm really getting tired and frustrated of it. Although, to be honest, I did not see the Arsenal game today because I had to do a funeral up in Erie, Pennsylvania. It's my 4th funeral in Erie of the year. Please, everybody up in Erie, take your vitamins and get to the gym and take good care of yourselves. So don't fall apart like Arsenal.
Bray is asking, Mark, with the new roster rules, likely there's an extra buyout. Who do you think we buy out next? So for those of you who haven't seen, listeners, MLS is tweaking some of the roster rules midseason. So they're decoupling the U22 slots with the number of DPs and the designation of those designated players. So in theory, Rabbi, I think the Rapids are going to have more than one free U22 slot to become available, given what's going on with Cole Bassett, or maybe there's a designation that they could flip over from some player. This is the kind of nerdy stuff that Porrick Smith absolutely loves to work with. But now we're thinking, the league is thinking about giving 2 more buyouts. That wasn't clear to me from what I've seen, Mark, whether those are
one
two...
more buyout. They have the one, and
the
then
one.
They're adding a second.
But so is the buyout they're adding, is that do they now have 2 in-season buyouts and just the 1 off-season buyout? Rabbi's nodding.
No.
Okay.
It's a total of 2 buyouts. And I don't know that they're... That's a good question. And it's we won't really know about the time. I'm not sure we know about the timing of the buyouts now.
Because previously it was you got 1 off-season buyout and you got 1 in-season buyout.
I'm not sure that was ever clear. I think that the statement was you get 1 buyout. Other than that, when a player kind of comes off the books, or maybe you can buy them. Maybe you can buy any player out in the offseason, but once January 1 hits, you're out of luck. You have no choice. I'm not sure. That's a great question. My understanding is you had 1 buyout before. This is the only important thing to know. You had 1 buyout before. Now you have 2. The guys on Total Soccer Show were like, Emil Reggiano, this is Rigoni for Austin FC. This is your problem, right? Like, but for the Rapids, to quickly answer your question, I actually feel like they've gotten the roster pretty healthy. And
yeah,
there are not so many players who are obvious buyout candidates. The only obvious buyout candidate normally might have been Jonathan Lewis, but according to my numbers, Jonathan Lewis's contract expires at the end of this year. So it's possible that if the Rapids really need the $435,000 that we're paying him, that they could buy him out in June so that they have that money available for the next window. I don't know if they need that. I also don't know that Jonathan Lewis's value has so cratered that they couldn't sell him for $200,000 or $150,000 in GAM and an international slot to another team, and, you know, offload that contract without, you know, kind of cutting the losses completely. But other than that, there's nobody on this roster who I say like, ooh, that's a bad contract. We need to clear the decks for that. Everybody else is on a reasonable contract or a low contract. I think the big thing from the new roster rules that was notable was that the addition of either having three U22 slots and three DPs, as opposed to before where it was basically you could have two DPs and a young money DP or an under 22 DP, or you could have three DPs, but you wouldn't have a U22. That's going to be good for the Rapid. That's going to give them a little bit of roster flexibility. The players that immediately jump to mind with that one are the ability to re-sign Cole Bassett or Sam Vines or Ali Laraz as, Bassett is beyond 22. Vines,
he's
not quite there yet.
Mark, with Bassett's current contract, he is currently a U22 player. By the time that contract ends, he will have graduated out. So Vines would be in that same category. It'd be great if it was a U24 slot, Mark, if that was a thing, so that you could just give Bombito the bag right now and then secure his future or ensure that you're getting a big bag for him in the future. But yeah, I don't know that there's not an obvious like young candidate on the team right now who I think has a lot of upside, who could become like the pay me right now for me to stay in MLS with the, you know, the handshake agreement that then you're going to sell me later. I don't know that there's an obvious guy who has a lot of demand outside right now from U22 slot on that, but, you know, TBD.
Yep. So I don't have any clear ones, and our roster is a little bit is surprisingly, the guys I all mentioned are all 22 or 23, so they don't really quite fall into there. So we'll see what happens.
But to Bray's question, Mark, a lot of the guys who would have been buyout candidates were either traded in the summer last year or had options that weren't picked up, or Danny Wilson and Sam Nicholson who were waived. So the dead weight that normally you would consider for a buyout is effectively off the team. I do think Jonathan Lewis is one of those possible candidates, Mark. I don't know that he has a whole lot of resale value, but, you know, it's not like he's not hurting the team right now. There's not an academy kid who you desperately want to give a homegrown deal to right now as well. Like the question I would have for if you're buying out a Rapids player right now is the contract so bad, is by Porik Smith Rapids math they just so much dead weight that it's worth getting rid of them rather than having them, you know, go through the motions in training and not make the team squad? Or are they holding up the roster flexibility that you would want in the summer, and can you not get out of their contract later on? So as you said, Jonathan Lewis is in the final year of his guaranteed deal. If the Rapids don't want him, they will just end the negotiations and announce that he's a free player at the end of the year. Why buy him out? You have to pay him that money anyways. So why not pay him and have him as a viable rostered player? Maybe the only other player that I have that's considered in there, Mark, would be, you know, we don't have the salaries yet for this year. The MLSPA will probably be releasing them in the next 2 months or so. But Lal Sabubakar, Mark, as we talked, you know, got a pretty substantial raise to like $700,000 last year. And that's a lot of money for a third center back who's probably as good as he's ever going to be. And so if there's any confidence that the coaching staff has in wanting to get Mike Edwards more involved as a bench player on the first team, or a Nate Jones or Daniel Chacon when he comes back from his ACL injury this summer, I think that's maybe a possibility one. But Lawless is a good guy in the locker room. He's one of the few old men that you have along with Keegan Rosenberry. I think he's worth hanging around right now. And then we've got a two-parter from Scott Hammond. Mark, Scott's one of our best HTHLers. So to Highliner Scott, I'll answer the first one. How long is it going to take for this team to gain respect from around the league? Listeners, you might remember that the Rapids won the Western Conference in 2021 and then
Jonathan Lewis did a big expose with The Athletic. And what was the big quote to come out of that, Mark? How desperate the Rapids were to make some noise in the playoffs because, to quote Jonathan Lewis, quote, nobody respects us, end quote. And everybody was coming in super suspect from them. And then the Rapids crapped the bed in Pittsgiving. And then they came out the next year and they sucked. It's like, oh, yeah, we already knew that. Like the dismissiveness of the Rapids, I think, is going to have to continue. Is going to continue, and it is going to take a lot to decouple that. I think you're talking 2-3 years straight of making the playoffs, no long stretches where they're really, really bad, consistency in terms of quality DPs, whether or not the Rapids are spending for that. So that could be Rafael Navajo and Georgi Mihailovic being good over an extended period of time. These are good DPs. We're not going to sell them. We don't need to spend big transfer fees to bring in new designated players. And fundamentally, Mark, they have to do something in the playoffs. Like, you know, where there's doubt about them, Mark, is that I think we can comfortably say since the introduction of the designated player rule and other teams spending more money is that the ceiling for the Rapids outside of 2010, it was very, very well understood and was also very, very low. If they get to a quarterfinal, they're probably playing a team that is better than them on paper, that is more expensive, and has 2 to 3 players that are better than any of the players the Rapids have. And on paper, the Rapids lose that. And then you go to a semifinal, and that gets magnified. And then if you were to go to a final, if we plop the Rapids into that MLS Cup final, Mark, against Columbus Crew, I don't know that there is one Rapids player that you would say replaces their Columbus equivalent in the starting 11. If you take the 2023 Colorado Rapids and the 2023 Columbus Crew and you say, build me the best starting 11 out of that entire team, you're taking the 11 starters for Columbus Crew. So the Rapids are going to have to either bridge that talent gap or prove that they can overcome that talent gap and do that with some level of consistency and climax to where the narrative around them, to where they're constantly the punching bag, to where, you know, Matt Doyle says, you know, the Rapids in all caps of saying, like, this is how bad that the Rapids are. Or when KSC puts out a tweet saying that, you know, there's the new visual scanner so you don't have to go through a metal detector. And then one of the random MLS accounts, you know, posts, you know how we know that these things are getting super cheap? Even the Rapids have them at their stadium. Mark, go ahead.
So I guess I agree with you almost completely. I'll just say it slightly differently. There are two steps. There are two levels of respect. Level one will be when we start listening to MLS commentators on Apple TV, other, you know, kind of league podcasts, guys at The Atlantic, and they start saying things like the Rapids are for real this season, or you've got to watch these three players on the Rapids. They're really something to watch, right? Like, because nobody's excited about this team, or they're starting to have their interest piqued, but they're not convinced. And I think somewhere around June, people will start to take this team seriously if they can continue to produce results like they have now, which is roughly 1.5 points a game, kind of like middle of the pack, you know, kind of looking at that back end of the playoffs kind of situation. So that's level one. Level one will be moderate amounts of respect from the league because players are doing cool things and the team is performing at about a 500 rate. The second level will be winning a playoff game, right? Because I think you probably know this, Matt, and most of our listeners probably know this, but in the last 10 years, Colorado Rapids have one playoff win. They won the playoff game in 2016 at home against LA Galaxy. That's the last time they have a playoff win. That's a long, long time ago. That is basically the entire time that I've been writing about the Colorado Rapids. They have one playoff. Don't blame me for this, man. You can't say that I jinxed the team. They have to spend money and have decent pizza and, you know, do a good job at running a club. It's not on me, baby. But that being said, like, that's the second level of respect, which is this team needs to win a playoff game. So, and they can do it. I mean, they've been in the playoffs a couple times the last couple of years. They've been on the cusp of things. They just need a manager who can get them into the playoffs and dial them in, and a couple of team leaders, and they'll get there. So this is, they can reach the promised land. I believe in it.
Scott's other question, Mark, when Connor is back healthy, how do you balance midfield minutes for all these guys, especially with Diok looking good in his limited time and Jasper getting a contract extension? I'd have to look back, Mark, and do some calendar math. I believe it's either this week or next week that is the end of the timeline we were given from Chris Armas for the knee injury that Connor Ronan suffered at Real Salt Lake in the Derby. But so I think it's a really good question that Chris Armas has on his hands. And honestly, Mark, I don't think all of the Ross and Cole Bassett have done nothing to lose their spot. So for me, the question is, given what we've seen that Bassett has been able to do from a deeper lying role, do you want to move him further up field and disrupt whatever has been going on there, which has been okay at times, not great, in order to bring somebody back in? But I think there is a completely valid argument, Mark, regardless of the timeline that Lamine Diok is on, or the fact that I think Connor Ronan is still the best number eight on the team, that you can say that those two have earned the right to continue to be the starters until there is some tactical reason that you want to change it up from a skill set standpoint, or until the team starts losing or they stop dominating their matchups that they're having in the double pivot. So I guess my answer to Scott's question, Mark, if I was Chris Armas, is you let Ollie and you let Cole cook until they give you a reason to bring somebody else into that kitchen.
Yeah, I think it's okay to put Cole Bassett back at the kind of left mid position alongside Mihailovic. Although Mihailovic kind of in the middle was where I thought he should be from the beginning, and others were like, no, you know, somebody else should be in that spot. You know, realistically, you're looking at a starting lineup that would probably look Cole Bassett, Georgi Mihailovic, Calvin Harris across the middle, followed by Ollie Larraz and Connor Ronan. And that's my best five in the middle. I think that's a very good lineup. My only concerns or my only thoughts over the time that the Rapids have been playing with this 4-2-3-1 under Chris Armas is that it's not quite as fluid as I would like it to be. We don't see the wings swap sides and go inverted as often as we used to under Frazier or Hudson. We don't see Cole Bassett kind of reversing and switching positions with Mihailovic. Cole Bassett is still often the late arriving runner, although sometimes in the final third, it all kind of looks, you know, kind of compacted into the middle. So those are some of the things that I see. That's the way I'd play it if I were them, which is I think Connor Ronan gets a spot back. And the most likely guy to lose his spot is Cabral, or Yapi started on the left side once, or, you know, Calvin Harris or Omer Fernandez. Those guys are all the kind of guys you rotate in and out. But Mihailovic, Larraz, Bassett, and Ronan, you know, put them in Sharpie, you know, the extra thick black Sharpie marker on the team sheet every week.
All right, Rabbi, let's land this plane. Listeners, you can follow us collectively on the socials at @soccer_rabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard, and at Rapids96Podcast. Check out our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. That's where you can become a paid Highliner, get the merch, get in touch, read all of Mark's written work. Most of my written work on the Rapids these days is at burgundywave.com. Rate, review, share, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and send us your questions just like Scott and Bray and other people have using the hashtag AskHTHL or by commenting or DMing us or sending us an email at rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Happy 420. Happy Earth Day. We'll see you next week.
Blink three times, Chris Armas.